You're listening to The World Is Just a Book Away podcast. I'm James Owens, founder and CEO of The World Is Just a Book Away, a nonprofit organization on a mission to promote literacy and education by developing libraries and programs in disadvantaged communities around the world. For more information about The World Is Just a Book Away, please visit www.wijaba.org. That's WIJABA.org. My guest today on The World Is Just a Book Away podcast is internationally renowned journalist Riz Khan. Riz was born in Aden, South Yemen, to an Indian mother and a Pakistani father. He was educated in London and is often cited as the first mainstream BBC and CNN newscaster of South Asian origin. In addition to his work with the BBC and CNN, Riz hosted his own eponymous show on Al Jazeera English from 2006 to 2011. He has interviewed many of the world's leaders, including Kofi Annan, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, the Dalai Lama, and Nelson Mandela. Riz serves on the advisory board of The World Is Just a Book Away, international children's literacy nonprofit. I am also honored that he is a contributor to my book, The World Is Just a Book Away. In our conversation, Riz and I discuss the importance of reading in his life, how books and reading have influenced the hundreds of people he's interviewed over the years, and how cross-cultural reading has shaped the leaders of today. Today, I'm delighted to have Riz Khan join us for our podcast. Riz and I came to know each other many years ago, I believe in about 2008, we were introduced by Dr. Mohammed Yunus, Nobel Peace Laureate, Dr. Mohammed Yunus. And Riz, I was very intrigued with Riz's career as a journalist and as a writer, and asked him to become part of my book, The World Is Just a Book Away. And since that time, Riz has become very involved, and I want to thank you for that, Riz, in the charity, The World Is Just a Book Away, or WIJABA, and serving on the advisory board. So I'm delighted to have you with us here today, Riz.
James, thanks very much. I'm very honored to be on your show. Yes, it's amazing how time has flown by, and it's been great to see everything develop. The book's been published now, amazing collection of people in it as well. So, and of course, more strength to WIJABA for all the incredible work it does for very needy children.
Thank you. Thank you indeed. Let's start talking, Riz, about the importance that reading played or plays in your life.
Well, of course, I'm from the generation that was not blessed, I put that in inverted commas, with iPads and computers and every kind of mobile device on the planet now. And so much of the entertainment, much of the education, much of the information that I got in my early years was essentially through books. And so for me, as an avid reader, it was something I just did a lot of. I mean, I was your classic kid who was hidden under the covers with a torch, flashlight, as you say in America. Reading into the early hours while my mother was saying, you know, go to sleep, you need to get your rest. And of course it was amazing because I was able to get my hands on pretty much everything because of a whole selection of friends from diverse backgrounds. One friend used to read his father's library of self-motivation books. So I found myself reading Napoleon Hill and people like that, Carnegie and all these guys in my, well, preteen years, actually. I remember reading Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude at the age of 12. It was quite funny. So, and I was a huge comic fan. So I actually read a lot of Marvel and DC comics and was an artist, you know, from childhood, actually. I found I could sort of naturally draw. So I was always drawing these heroes, superheroes, and so on. So reading and artwork came together very much for me quite early on.
And I know, because we've had conversations about this before and what you've now shared with our listeners, the importance reading has had in your life. What importance do you think literacy plays in general, or how important do you think it is?
I think it becomes very obvious in any sort of conversation, and certainly for me as a journalist, with interviewees, how much they, those individuals, have been reading, how much they have actually absorbed, and how much reading has become a foundation for their literacy. So for me, it's a prime indication of a person's level of education and development and growth to see how much reading they have done, largely through their knowledge of the world, their ability to articulate, and their ability to express themselves in general. I was very blessed, again, reading from an early age, which helped me with my English. And though I actually studied to be a doctor, that was my goal in life. My degree was in physiology, in medical physiology, and I wanted to be a doctor. But because of my standard of English, I was able to transition into journalism, which was meant to be temporary. I was supposed to go back to medicine. But because of that reading and the literacy I acquired through the years and years of reading and being very intently absorbed in books of all kinds, I was able to find a new path for my life, really.
And Riz, through your years of very successful journalism, from the BBC to CNN to your show on Al Jazeera English, I know you've had the opportunity to interview so many prominent people, ranging from Kofi Annan and Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, to the Dalai Lama and Nelson Mandela. I mean, the list of people you've interviewed is just astonishing.
I've been lucky, yeah.
In that process, I'm curious if you have a recollection of conversations about books and reading cropping up or being a theme or something you noticed.
In many cases, the subject of reading might come up and books might come up with as a guide to what influenced the person in their early life. For example, one of the series I did on Al Jazeera English when we launched that in 2006, the series I did one-on-one was a mix of people, from politicians to Hollywood and Bollywood stars to authors. I did people like Margaret Atwood, for example, and Anne Rice, Interview with a Vampire, and so on. So my interest was to try to get a large representation of interviewees from different backgrounds, different cultures, international authors, international actors, international politicians, and so on, and influencers, world influencers. And in each case, in talking about their history and their childhood, I wanted to know what influenced them. And in many cases, the kind of books they read, the kind of experiences they had through their interest in literature or particular teachings in books, was often an indicator of what guided them later in life. So it was it wasn't uncommon for someone to talk about how it was, having read something that they discovered that they had an interest in or that they wanted to find out more about. Sometimes as simple as reading a book about a country and having suddenly this desire to go and travel and discover the world. So it was quite important, actually, yes.
Did you find that these people in general, and I know we're talking about a very large body of people, hundreds, if not thousands of people that you've interviewed, do you find in general that prominent people, people who've achieved success in whatever field they've chosen to enter, do you find that many of them are voracious readers?
Absolutely. And what's really interesting is when I see a strong cross-cultural reference or influence. So I might, for example, interview a prominent, let's say, Arab politician or diplomat, and find that the kind of books they read in their early youth would not be what we would typically expect them to have read. They might have been something very off the wall. And these kind of, pieces of literature influenced them, or at least, attracted their interest at a time when, we would have thought, well, someone in the Middle East might have been on a very different path. So it was always interesting to see that kind of cross-cultural connection. And people would be reading Western classics in places where I might not expect it. And then, of course, there were people in the West reading Eastern classics, if you like, or the teachings of Rumi or Gibran, Khalil Gibran, things like this. Seeing the crossover was always interesting. People I didn't expect to have read certain things ended up having read them. So that was always quite interesting.
I'm glad you raised that point, Riz, because that's one of the things that came forward for me in completing The World Is Just a Book Away with the people in it. For example, one that stands out to me is Archbishop Tutu. And I don't know why this particular one surprised me so much, but talking to me about how much he loved reading The Lone Ranger as a little boy.
Exactly. That's exactly the kind of thing I mean. Yeah. So it would be interesting, you know, with my interest in comics and superheroes. Now, of course, the cinematic Marvel universe and DC universe has changed discourse on superheroes, and irrespective of background, culture, whatever, everyone now knows Iron Man, Captain America, and all these kind of great figures. But for a long time, it was exclusive to those who read the comics. And to come across, you know, celebrities or, you know, significant world-influencing people who would say, oh, well, you know, I used to love reading Spider-Man. I loved the angst that Peter Parker had. It was so, I could relate to it in my youth or something like that. That was always quite funny. So yes, Archbishop Tutu, who's a wonderfully hilarious man. I'm sure his readings were far and wide, and Lone Ranger is definitely no surprise.
Yes, and he in the book, and that's another thing that surprised me is how funny he is, how funny Archbishop Tutu is. He discusses in the book, In the World Is Just a Book Away, the wisdom of his father's understanding that it didn't really matter so much what he read as a child, as long as he developed a love of reading as a child that would sustain him through life.
That's it. That's exactly it. I think for me, the importance of reading whatever I was reading. I mean, you know, at the age of 12, I was hardly, you know, prime profile for reading The World, you know, Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. But it just happened to be something that gripped me, and you know, a lot of the content in it stuck. And there were a few items that I was able to kind of absorb into my life philosophy. I think that's been a big factor for me. So yes, I think reading, irrespective of what it is still a good thing to do. And it's something I encourage my daughter, because of course my big worry was with her growing up in the age of electronic distraction, as it is sometimes, that she might not be the kind who would pick up a book. Now, ironically, when we travel, and we travel a lot together globally, she often carries around a physical book. And occasionally I say to her, why don't you get ebooks, you know, and read them on a tablet or something. And she's, well, no, I like holding the book, Dad, which I was quite pleased with, you know, as quietly, as much as it makes her backpack rather heavy. I did find it was great that she would carry on three or four books for our weeks of travel during the summer, for example.
Well, it is a different experience, isn't it? People often talk to me about that because we provide libraries and books and educational programs for kids. They often ask me the question about the physical versus the electronic. And of course, for a lot of kids in developing countries, the electronic isn't yet a reality just because simply the cost of the devices. But I also view it, and I wonder if you feel the same way, as not being an either or, but an and.
You know, I do think they can be complementary. And my house, I mean, my biggest problem is, as much as I try to be eco-friendly, and I'm an avid recycler, and I'm very careful about trying to minimize, you know, my use of paper, I find my house is actually quite full of it, largely because when I travel, I buy magazines. I still have a very large library, a huge collection of books. And I find myself with a lot of physical content, you know, paper content, written content. Whereas, I mean, there's the you know, the kind of more reflective side of me that says I should be downloading electronic manuals. I should not worry. And I'm glad that actually industry is changing and not piling a ton of paper in different languages as manuals for electronic gadgets and so on. Now it's just go online and find it. So I'm kind of glad from an eco perspective that there is a move towards digitized content. But I still get great pleasure in physically holding a book and reading it. I'm a great fan of graphic novels too, so I still read, you know, comics when I get my hands on them. I don't get much time for that nowadays, but if I do, I find myself enjoying reading the actual comic. The irony is that with electronics, it's possible to zoom in, and I find myself sometimes, you know, distractedly picking up a magazine and wanting to look closer at something, you know, as my aging eyes struggle to see fine detail perhaps, and find myself trying to do a pinch and expand as I would on a on a tablet, and then realizing, of course, I'm looking at paper and it's not going to work. So I think we live in this kind of hybrid world, certainly for now, and I don't think that's a problem. I like the fact that I have both options, and I'm glad my daughter's still at that age where a book isn't a historic piece of work, a physical book. I actually went to the house to dinner at a house in New Delhi. It was an oil and gas executive, very kind of quiet man, in the sense that he was very understated, and invited me to his house for dinner. And it was actually the most phenomenal house I've ever been to. And I've been to some amazing places, as you can imagine, as a journalist. I don't think I'll ever see a house like that ever again. I actually say that with an amount of conviction that is just, it even blows me away. But he had an incredible library, and he'd built it beautifully. It was almost like something out of Hogwarts, the Harry Potter kind of old paneled library with a spiral metal staircase going up and so on through different levels. And I said to him, why are you doing this? He said, I'm collecting books, and I want the collection to reach at least 1 million. He said, because at that time, he was, and this was going back a couple of years, he said, more electronic books are being sold than physical books on Amazon, for example, right now. And I want to build a collection where I can keep these as a kind of strong reminder of our heritage. And he makes all his visitors kind of pull a book out, sign it somewhere randomly, just pick a book out randomly, sign it randomly somewhere in the book, and just put it back. And he says, and I hope down the road people will, look at these books and then discover signatures in them and so on. I happened to pull out a book on cartoons, funny enough, and I did a cartoon in it and put it back in. But I thought that was a very interesting idea, a man who's preparing for a future where we may not actually really get to see many physical books.
Mm. Yeah, it's hard to know where it's going, but I'm pleased to see that the desire to read in whatever form it comes seems to remain strong.
Yeah, and that's the key, actually, the fact that people, can read. And the beauty of electronics is they've advanced to the degree where, now this electronic paper and electronic ink technology allows us to have devices that don't necessarily mean we're staring at what we would call traditionally computer or tablet screens. They are now more like reading a book in the physical sense. It's interesting to see that side develop, because of course it's easier on the eyes and so on, and it's possible to read for longer periods without kind of eye strain, and that's quite good too.
Absolutely, and very different from when you were born, which is very close to the time I was born, but you've had this fascinating background, because you were born in what was still the British colony of Aden. Right. And then you went to Britain as a young boy, and you grew up in Britain, and then you've lived in America, and now really are sort of a citizen of the world.
Yeah, too much airline food.
Yeah, a lot. You're always telling me when we're texting, it's usually that you're either off to someplace or returning from someplace.
And it's always an odd hour. That's true.
And I think this man must have more frequent flyer miles than anyone I know.
Only I've discovered they're quite useless nowadays, so that doesn't help too much. But no, you're right. I mean, the one thing is that I joked about it, as I end up in a career in journalism, which was a little unexpected for me. People talked about it, and I said, well, you have to realize that I had English beaten into me by nuns at a convent school in Aden, which was a British colony at the time, back through the 60s, and then had journalism beaten into me by crusty old BBC news editors. Quite a rarity nowadays, they've kind of disappeared. But it was a very, sort of colonial and post-colonial time in which I grew up. So I had a lot of those strong influences. The English language is, for me, one of the most powerful and rich tools I could ever possess. And it's helped obviously guide my career down a rather interesting path. And I always say it's interesting as well that my command of the English language, because of the kind of experience I had, was always kind of a weapon too when it came to dealing with issues such as racism or any kind of, I say I was picked on for any particular reason just because of the way I looked. I had long hair and an earring at one stage when I was into, playing drums. But the fact that I could speak, good English and had a good vocabulary and could command the language effectively kind of gave me a great form of, as I say, a weapon, a great way to retort to any kind of accusations, and it was very useful.
And I find it very interesting because you're touching on this theme of transition, both the transition in your life and cultural transitions, and how English served you. That in my book, The World Is Just a Book Away, you touch on one of the books that I've enjoyed the most in my life also, which is The Remains of the Day. And on page 119 and 120 of the book, you talk a little bit about the influence of that particular book on your life. And I wonder if you could just read for us your passage that starts with Great Britain through the end of the passage.
Certainly, and this actually, it's true. It, you know, for me, this is why this book was such a powerful one, that I grew up in that area where in that era in which, you know, I saw that transition, that sort of post-colonial transition of what Britain used to be. And so I could relate to it and understand it, but I was amazed that Kazuo Ishiguro, the author, was able to, you know, to pinpoint things so accurately and reflect on what British society was so accurately. It did surprise me, and this is the section I you know, this is what I wrote for you in the Wijaba book. I wrote, "The Great Britain of my youth was rapidly changing from the polite, stratified, and even rigid culture so beautifully described in The Remains of the Day. There were still strong elements of it that I could witness in some of my elderly teachers and those I met through the ATC. Those were times when students could stand up and straighten their ties before leaving or entering a classroom, running an errand, or speaking to a teacher. Those aspects of British character still resonate with me. I have also lived through the transition in British society, which has been both good and bad. Today, Britain is a much more mixed society with tremendous cultural and ethnic diversity. At the same time, however, it has lost much of the politeness and discipline of the past, and that can be seen in the way people interact with each other. There's far more aggression and violence, also a greater sense of competitiveness that is often counterproductive to good and cooperative social behavior. Crime, particularly violent crime, has increased. Although I was not looking for the book, The Remains of the Day, to help me better understand my character, I did feel connected with elements of Britain's history and character, which helped shape the world around me. It stirred me emotionally, both as a story and as a testament to a dying era. As with the books of my earliest childhood, it allowed me to travel through time and experience the world through someone else's eyes, and moved me because it carried echoes of my own personal experience with British character."
Beautifully said, and I think it really summarizes what many people feel as they go through transitions in time and transitions in culture.
Right. And the ATC, to which I referred in that passage, the Air Training Corps, was something I had joined. It was an organization I had joined at the age of about 12. And I was there for about 5-6 years until my exams for university and so on kind of took over my time. But the Air Cadets was kind of junior Air Force. It was a way the Air Force, Royal Air Force in Britain, would recruit many young men because it would give them a chance to go out and, you know, basically be part of an adventure club, which is really what it was for me. Being in a single parent family with no real financial resources, it was a great way for me to do amazing things, you know, and experience the world at a much, you know, at a very different level without the need for, you know, spending tons of money to be parts of lots of different clubs. So, but the thing with the Air Cadets was we got out to RAF bases. So I'd often find myself mixing with these kind of, again, crusty old RAF types, and they would also reflect the past that I had left in Aden, because when I would say I was born in Aden, they say, "Oh, I served in Aden," and "Oh yes, Mad Mitch was there." Yes, and it was a crazy time because the British were basically being kicked out, essentially with rebel movements and so on, and there was a lot of nasty stuff going on. But it was one of the reasons we left. It just became incredibly dangerous and difficult. But it was, you know, seeing these guys at the RAF in the RAF who were from that era, it was also a reflection of that old British past and character.
And do you is this something you reflect on or discuss? Now, Zara, your daughter, is now 12 years old. Is this something you reflect on, this part of your history and the cultural shifts you've experienced? Is this something you share with her?
Not yet. Not in that sense, because she's still, in my mind, a little bit young. Perhaps wouldn't be able to absorb really what I'm getting at just yet. But what I have done is, since she was about 5 years old, I've made sure that she and I travel every summer. I have 2 months off here in the US, which amazes me because our summer holidays are never quite that long. But you know, she and I get to then travel the world. And as you recall, we came out to see you in the Los Angeles area, out in Santa Monica, when she was, I think she was about 5 or 6 at the time. I think it was our second trip, because I think we went off to Hawaii afterwards. But I've made it my kind of mission to less focus on her academic achievements, and unfortunately her mother does. So it turned out she's very much a straight A student, which is a blessing, but it's not a pressure I wanted to put on her to succeed in exams and academia. I wanted her to have a rounded understanding of the world around her. And I do that by traveling with her and taking her to different places. And I encourage her to absorb other cultures, you know, again, reading about them. I try to get her now, as she's older, to do some research on the places to which we go. She wanted to go to Japan last summer, for example, because she had started to get into digital art and manga comics and kind of Japanese art style. So we went to Tokyo, but of course, we're having 2 months, we actually end up having to do a mix of things. So I said, well, if we're heading out east, let's do Singapore, Malaysia, and we did Sri Lanka as well, some touring around Sri Lanka, and Japan, and spent 2 months in, 2 weeks in Tokyo, you know, going around, which of course was, it did kind of strike her how little English was there in the literature she tried to get. So it was a bit of a wake-up call. But I do try to make sure she experiences the world so that she can have a better sense of what's around her and develop her EQ as well as her IQ, which I know she gets from everywhere else around her.
And that reminds me of something, which is one of the reasons I'm so passionate about the work we do with WeJava. And when I say we, in this sense, the we includes you. Because there's a little boy that I met at one of our library openings in Mexico. He was about 12 also, 11 or 12, and he was in a wheelchair. And Chihuahua is very poor, as are most of the regions we serve, or all of the regions we serve have underprivileged people. And he said to me, it was translated for me, but he said, thank you for bringing books to me. I cannot travel the world in my chair, but now I can travel the world through books.
Exactly. And that's it. Exactly it. People unfortunately learned about the world the wrong way in that kind of colonial era. Muhammad Ali, the late Muhammad Ali, boxer, great boxer, was quite funny in the way he described how literature was very pegged towards the West. So he said, like, Tarzan can speak to the animals. And he's a white guy. Wait a minute, what about all the Africans? Why can't they speak to the animals? So that literature of that time was kind of restrictive for a lot of people in terms of really, you know, exploring the world and expanding what the world was about. But look how things have changed. And when you have books like Khalid Hosseini, you know, with The Kite Runner, and these kind of books that bring the world to people, it's literally the world in our heads, and that's the amazing thing. So, you know, bless that young lad for understanding what he was getting out of it, and you know, more power to him for doing that.
Yes, and to understand, and the understanding and the appreciation that children like my son Alexander and Zara have the opportunity to travel and see the world, but most children don't have this opportunity, and something as simple as a book can give them, really open their minds and give them the opportunity to explore the world.
Well, in all honesty, I know this is your show, but just to blow your trumpet is what impressed me, James. I mean, you know, certainly as a journalist, I've been very blessed in all the things I've done, the places I've been to and so on. But when I saw the dedication you had to what you were doing, and it was tough times for you, I know, because you went through quite a lot in getting WeJava set up and then keeping it going. That's what impressed me, when something comes from the heart like that and seeing the good it does. And it's one of those things, and it's something I've told my daughter that, look, you know, you know, as you're getting older now, it's less about going, you know, around the world and trying to find just fun things to do. We have to go out and do useful things. So going out and volunteering, probably from next year, I think, is where we'll start, where she actually gets to spend some of that summer holidays volunteering to do some stuff. And maybe perhaps we can get out to one of the Bujaba libraries and do some work in getting those in order and you know, changing lives of needy children there. Because it is about that. It's about contributing. And so more power for you, more power to you for having created such a fantastic organization and really sticking with it through tough times too.
Well, thank you, Rose. I appreciate that. And of course, none of this would be possible without the support of people like you. And when you mention young people volunteering, one of our future episodes will be with Danny Zappin, who's now a 13-year-old boy who raised a library in Mexico for over 500 children as his bar mitzvah project.
Amazing. Yeah, I've seen some of the stories. I read the Bujaba letters and see some of the amazing things. And I'm just glad that young people, especially that young, are taking the initiative to do such stuff.
Yeah, it's really amazing to see with the young, and I think important to introduce them to. Exactly. Riz, in the interest of time, just a few more questions. What role do books and reading play in your life now?
Oh, well, I'm still a very avid reader. I confess now, as much as I've got a huge physical library and I still plow through, I occasionally pick up books and read them again, even though there's a huge list of books I've yet to read, only because I've enjoyed them so much. Funny enough, two of the funniest books I ever read, I was just trying to look to see if I could actually get digital copies of them because I have the physical copies. But my traveling bags are quite full at the moment. And that is Tom Sharp, the British author who was in South Africa for quite a while. He got kicked out, actually, for his writings. But he wrote Riotous Assembly and Indecent Exposure. Absolutely hilarious books. And it was really funny when Zara's mother was expecting, was about to deliver. I was waiting there in the hospital with her, and there was, you know, it was a long kind of wait for Zara to finally appear. I just picked up the book and started laughing out loud so much that she started to get annoyed with me. And I had to cover my face with a pillow because it's really a laugh out loud book. So I still read a lot, and I'll still go and revisit these fantastic pieces of literature that I come across over the years, and then I recommend them to other people. But I mean, I try not to read books too many times over again because it's too easy to miss so many other good pieces of work. But I have a lot of favorite authors, and I relish when their new books come out. John Irving, I think, is such an amazing author, from The World According to Garp, the first book I read, through to Hotel New Hampshire and Son of a Circus. I mean, absolutely amazing writing. So for me, the ability to be able to escape into these remarkable worlds that these fantastic writers create is just, there's nothing to replace it, to be honest. So there's no way I'm ever going to stop reading.
Excellent. No, me neither. Excellent. What are you currently reading that you could recommend to our readers, and why?
Well, funny enough, I just in the last, because I'm actually trying to re-embark on a lot of media work, because I've put that on hold with my sort of ethical brand clothing line that I launched over the past few years, and that's really time consuming. So I actually have been more trying to read articles on e-commerce. So I actually haven't had kind of a fiction book in my hand for a little while, at least the last year, because I've been trying to read more about how the social media, e-commerce, and these work, especially through a lot of articles, because it's changing day by day. By the time someone publishes a book, the parameters have changed, and Facebook, for example, is no longer valid. It's now about Instagram or Snapchat. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting time in terms of getting information. But I'm also busy trying to write two books myself. So I've been making a lot of notes on that. And one's about the news industry. And so for me, that's been quite time consuming. So in terms of the reading, I did try to pick up, and I couldn't find them, digital editions of those two Tom Sharp novels, because I wanted to go through those again soon. I haven't been able to pick up a fiction book for quite a while. The last thing I read, actually, was actually about a year ago, maybe a little less than a year ago, was the Wool series. Absolutely fantastic, remarkable kind of post apocalyptic world beautifully portrayed by an author called Hugh Howey, H-O-W-E-Y and H-U-G-H first name, Hugh Howey. And they're a series of books that are actually, I mean, really remarkable, very gripping. And so I read those just under a year ago. And sometimes I say, you know, someone will point me toward some fiction that, you know, because I do still like fantasy and science fiction kind of books as well. So I do get pointed sometimes by people to those. And there was a fantastic series called Red Rising, which originally I think is from about 2014, science fiction series by an author called Pierce Brown. It was a young guy and has an incredible ability to weave a story. And so I read that series of books set in the future, basically almost like a cross between Dune, Frank Herbert's Dune, with these warring kind of planets and factions and a stratified society with strong elements from Roman culture. Absolutely fantastic books, elements of The Hunger Games in there too. So, I do try to grab stuff when I can. It's just been the last year has been more about trying to get notes to write stuff and to get a business off the ground. So it's been a tough time.
Interesting, because we also in the series have Shobha Day, the very world-renowned Indian author, and she was also mentioning that with her time dedicated to all the writing she does, she's having trouble fitting in reading. But
she's a dynamo, complete dynamo. So yeah, not surprising. Indians are avid readers. I mean, Indians are some of the most well-read people I've come across. I mean, absolutely amazing.
She was mentioning, we were talking about this, and I had found it also because I haven't had as much time to read since my own book has come out and we've been doing work around the book. But yeah, as an avid reader, when I'm not reading, I feel, I would almost describe it as less of a sense of peace. I find that I crave it. Do you find that you miss it when you're away from it?
I do. You know, the thing is that I'm one of these who, I'm lucky I don't need a lot of sleep, but I will forsake even what little sleep I have just to keep plowing through a book. And I'll hold it till I'm, you know, literally the book or the, depending on if I'm reading the ebook, you know, will fall on my face, which is a lot more painful when it's an ebook and a tablet hits you. But I still plow through them whenever I can. But like I say, more recently for me, a lot of the articles and stuff. Actually, you know, that's the other thing. I especially with getting into the business side of things and trying to be a bit of an entrepreneur, I was reading a lot of Malcolm Gladwell's work as well. So, because I love the some of the inspirational stories and kind of analysis in there. And I know people have mixed feelings about it, but I found it fascinating. So yeah, I'll pick up whatever I can, whenever I can.
Is there anything else you'd like to add for our listeners?
I think it's, if they're listening, I'm hoping they're converts and that I don't need to kind of preach to the converted, but the value of passing on the bug of reading. I mean, if there's one thing to pass on, it's the bug of reading to the next generation and the next generation. I think that's crucial, irrespective of the tools, whether it's physical books or e-books. I think the need for generations to absorb information, to certainly improve their language skills through reading, and to perpetuate the concept of great writing by getting an interest themselves and perhaps, becoming writers. I think that's absolutely crucial for survival for our species. You know, people tend in this day and age to be very profit motive driven and worry about careers and look to certain types of careers, the sciences and, law and business to be the foundations of a truly successful life. And I'm afraid, sorry, it's not. If it wasn't for writing and art and generally the world of creativity, we'd be pretty much a subspecies on this planet. And the only thing I think that's helped us rise as much as we have is the ability to pass on information, to share experiences, to stimulate thought and conversation through books.
I think that's a great note to end on, Riz. And of course, as a convert, I completely agree with you. I want to thank you for of course, participating in The World is Just a Book Away. I hope many of our listeners will read your submission and also consider turning to Remains of the Day, which is just such a brilliant book. Yes. And I want to thank you for your help with helping Wejava serve the children we do and promote literacy. And thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today.
It's been an honor as much as it's a pleasure, James. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You've been listening to a podcast production of AW360, the year-round content destination from Advertising Week. Visit AW360 at 360.advertisingweek.com and be sure to check out the other AW360 podcasts now available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Producers on this podcast are Jack Hirschman and Richard Larson, with music provided by Audio Network. For more information on Advertising Week, the world's largest gathering of advertising, marketing, and technology leaders, now in 6 markets across the globe, visit www.advertisingweek.com.